The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Good morning. It is time to get up with controversial consequences. The Final Four is set, but a fabulous finish may have left more questions than answers. Meanwhile, the King returns. So why doesn't it feel much, much sunnier this morning in La La Land? We'll tell you. And then, I've been gone a while. This has to have gotten done, right? While I wasn't paying attention? Someone do something for the love of Christmas. We are back and better than ever. Let's do this. It's time to get up starting on this Monday. Delighted to be back.
Welcome back.
Good to see you.
Back, G.
Thank you, guys. Good to see you guys. Field Yates is here.
It's very good to be here.
Delightful to see you. Yeah. Chris Canty on the other side. Delighted to see you here and to see nothing on the other side of the studio as a result. And look at the crew. Brewski is ready to go. My Uncle Seth Greenberg, no relation, is up this morning. Vince Carter is going to throw down some jams. Zach Lowe's got a lot to say. Oh, we start with the controversy in the NCAA tournament yesterday. Who was watching? Creighton, San Diego State. Yet another unbelievable game, but the finish, unforgettable. Elite Eight, 34 seconds left. San Diego State up two. Not anymore. Oh, the inbound pass goes awry, and we're all tied. So here's how it finishes. Darian Tremel, 2 seconds, 1 second for the win. It's no good, but hold everything. The whistle blows. Take a close look. It's the left hand on the hip. Does he displace the shooter in the air before the ball leaves the hand? That's the standard. You know, Greg McDermott doesn't want to see the call. Now, Trammell would go to the line. He would miss the first. Oh, but clutch, he knocks down the second. San Diego State by one. Last chance, Creighton. And in something that would take me far too long to explain, they decide that this actually did take more than 1.3 seconds, even though the clock didn't show it that way. And San Diego State is on to the Final Four. Coach Greg McDermott, classy at the finish.
Two teams played their tails off. Officiating's part of the game. And we're not going to go there. We lost a game because we didn't do enough. And San Diego State did.
All right, delighted to get up with these guys here this morning. Seth, you would have handled that exactly the same way had you been deprived of a trip to the Final Four in
exactly
that circumstance. All right, let's get right to it. You coached in this game a long time. Was that the right or wrong call in that moment?
It was the wrong call, not just in that moment. They redefined what a foul was at the beginning of that game. Think about this. The total game, there were only 17 free throws shot. In the first half, neither team got into the bonus. If you watched that game, you would define that game as a physical game. It was a rock fight. And you know what? That call wasn't a foul in the first 10 minutes of the game. It wasn't a foul at halftime. It wasn't a foul in the second 10 minutes of the first half. You know what? It was only a foul at the end of the game. You can't redefine a foul. All right? The game is real simple. I got a text message from a Final Four official yesterday. He said, you can't officiate absolutes. You also have to officiate time and score and what happened prior to that call. And what happened prior to that call is that neither team was in the bonus that whole game until that last call. It was a physical game. You've got to pass on that. I love what Greg McDermott did. He took the high road, which he should. San Diego State won that game because they did make more plays. But you can't make that call if you didn't make it the first 39 minutes.
Let me give some context to that as well. There were only 22 fouls called in that game. To put that in perspective, the other three games this weekend in the Elite Eight had 30, 37, and 39 fouls called. So that's the way the game was being officiated. Vince, you played forever, college and pro level. What did you think of the call?
See, Greeny, you're supposed to ask me this first before Seth goes on that spiel because – yes, to me, it's an NBA foul, Greeny. It's now, Seth, hit me out. It's an NBA foul. That's how I view it. I look at it as an NBA foul first. I see the left hand clutching on Trimble's hip. And yes, Trimble sold it, as you should. When you see right there, there's the hold. And as the player, Trimble, feels the foul, he sells it a little bit to draw to get the call and make the referee make the call, either no call or not. And at the end of the game, as a player, having the ball in my hand in crunch time, if I'm going to drive and be aggressive, get into the paint, and I feel a little contact, particularly now in the NBA game, which tends to translate and bleed into the college game, you're going to blow up a little bit, meaning, sell the call a little bit.
I
think that's what he did to get the call.
Fine. Let me ask you a different question, which is to say, again, you're a player. And Seth just made a point that I completely agree with, which is games, the tone is set for the way a game is going to be called all day. To what degree do players adjust to that? Which is to say, when you're playing in a game, you feel that it sort of reminds me of like the way a strike zone is being called in baseball. All right, that's going to be called tonight, so we're going to adjust. The players, the hitters will adjust as a result of that. To what degree do the players adjust the physicality they are playing with based upon the way the game is being officiated on a given day?
Typically, in the first 5 minutes, some coaches I've played for, we would typically run a pick and roll play or something getting downhill to see what the referees are calling, what are they letting play, so we can adjust accordingly throughout the course of the game. That's usually how it works. And as a player who had the ball in their hand, had to make decisions or be aggressive, that's what I would see. But particularly players that are aggressive with their hands or their body, I want to see what the referees are calling. Particularly in the playoffs or tournament time, that's when they tend to let you play a little more, so you have to see what they're calling. And I agree with Seth 1,000%. If you're not calling this in 36, 38, 39 minutes, you have to let the players decide the game, not the call.
That's right. Again, so Seth, just to put a finishing touch on this, and we'll do the rest of the tournament stuff a little later in the hour. It's not about swallow the whistle at the end of the game. It's about call the game consistently from the beginning to the end. Right? Give me a final thought. Go ahead, Seth.
100%. Grady, right on the money. It's not about swallowing the whistle. It's basically you've created and defined what a foul would be, and then you cannot redefine a foul the last play of the game. Players adjust. Exactly right. Exactly what Vince says. But if that was a foul at the start of the game, I got no problem with the call. But it can't be a foul at the end of the game. There are no absolutes. Once you redefine a foul, all right, you've set basically the rules for the game. You can't make that call at the end of the game.
Okay, fair enough. I'm back 6.5 minutes, and I'm infuriated. Perfect. All right, stay where you are. Seth, I'm coming back to you a little bit later in the hour. Vince, we need to talk about what happened to the Lakers yesterday. Oh, Lakers and Bulls in Los Angeles. LeBron, back, better than ever? Well, we'll see. Coming off the bench for only the second time in his career. First quarter tied at 19. All the camera phones are out. This looked familiar to anybody? LeBron, the blow-by. Lakers an early lead, but then everything would go the other way. Chicago had their way. Second quarter, Lakers down 17 when Troy Brown throws that one down. He had 18 points on the day. And then here's LeBron. He would score 19 coming off the bench, but the Lakers down 8 at halftime. Third quarter, Lakers are down 15. Chicago battling to get into the playoffs on the eastern side of the ledger. Austin Reeves, we got a turnover. Zach LaVine's going to lay it in. He had 32, but go back to where the play is made. Watch Anthony Davis. Stop me if you've heard this before. Anthony Davis shaken up on the play. This time he jammed fingers. He would stay in the game. Took just 8 shots in this one for Los Angeles. Fourth quarter, Bulls up 11. It's LaVine again to 14-point game. And then the former Laker, Patrick Beverly, you know, he said he wanted to knock the Lakers out of the playoffs. Oh, no one loved this win more than Beverly did. He would score 10. Lakers lose. LeBron, how about the foot?
When the doctors told me I was healing faster than anybody I've seen before with the injury.
Did anyone ever suggest surgery?
Yeah, 2 doctors.
Why did you decide against it?
Because I went to LeBron James' feet. And he told me I should.
Okay, it's hilarious. I don't know what it means, but it's hilarious. In the meantime, Lakers happy to get him back. But the urgency is getting ramped up. 7 games left. They're currently just a game up from being out of the playoffs entirely. Play off, play in, play whatever you want to call it. They embark on a 5-game road trip starting Wednesday when they rematch with these Bulls. Okay, Vince Carter is still with us this morning, and Zach Lowe gets up with us this morning. Lowe, let's get you in here right away. What did you think? So you see LeBron, he comes off the bench. That's a big game for them at home. Should have all the enthusiasm of LeBron's return. And they mostly got worked yesterday by Chicago. What do we say about LeBron and the Lakers this morning?
Yeah, I'm going to give you some hard-hitting analysis, which is the Lakers are not going to win a lot of games when LeBron and AD combine for 34 points. This is still LeBron AD, and maybe Austin Reeves as the third best player, and a bunch of sixth or seventh guys who fit well but aren't like blowing anybody's doors off. And as far as LeBron, I thought he looked about as you'd expect for a guy coming off a really scary foot injury. He was a little rusty. He didn't look super assertive when he got into the game. And I looked at some of our tracking numbers today from Second Spectrum. Fewest pick and rolls he ran in any game this season was yesterday. Part of that is coming off the bench deflated his minutes with AD, who's his pick and roll partner. Third fewest dribbles of any game this season. He didn't look like he was really going to assert himself as a ball handler. That'll come with time. But as you said, Greeny, they don't have much time.
Yeah, VC, how about Anthony Davis in this? I mean, LeBron came back. Give him all the credit in the world. He rushed back. Anthony Davis took 8 shots yesterday. What do we say about that this morning?
That cannot happen right there, period. Outside of everything else, they've been playing great basketball, playing through Anthony Davis. 8 shot attempts cannot happen whether LeBron is there or not there. I mean, he's the guy that you're playing through. He's the guy that you said we need to put the ball in his hands to make plays, so and to be the kind of alpha dog, go-to number one guy, and 8 shots cannot happen. He played 36 minutes or so. He had a few free throws, I think 6 attempts at the free throw line. I mean, it's just, you need to play through him. LeBron can insert himself, and he can dictate when he needs to be aggressive and whatnot. And yes, he's playing himself back into game shape. And sometimes when you're coming off the bench, it's a little adjustment for him. But right now, Anthony Davis needs to take 15 to 20 shots because they need wins, not to just fit in.
Yeah, I here are the numbers here. He was 6 of 8 from the floor, 3 of 6 from the line, 15 points, 9 rebounds total, and 5 assists. What do we say, Zach? How about the Anthony Davis of it all?
Weird things happen in individual games. If this happens 2 or 3 more games, we can talk about it. For now, I'm just going to chalk it up to a strange game. LeBron coming off the bench. People trying to get their rhythm. No D'Angelo Russell. We should probably mention that at least. I'm going to just chalk it up to that. But Vince is right. It can't happen. If it happens again, we could all come and yell and scream about it.
Yeah, so the Lakers, as we mentioned, I mean, they are this close to being out of the playoffs entirely. They are also 2 games away from being out of the play-in in the positive way, meaning into the top 6. So anything could happen over the course of this last 2 weeks of the NBA regular season, and it probably will. All right, guys, stay close by. Much more basketball as we go. As we roll on this morning with Get Up, we get back to the NFL. Someone tell me this isn't happening. Are the Jets and Packers really at an impasse over Aaron? What happens if this doesn't get done? I'm not 100% sure I can take much more. In the meantime, how much is Bill Belichick to blame for the Patriots' recent struggles? How much pressure is he under to turn it around next year? We'll ask that question and we'll get it answered. We're rolling on. It's Get Up on ESPN.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than 1 rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use the code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use the code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
We are back on Get Up, and to the NFL we go. Caesars Sportsbook releasing team win totals yesterday. Let's play more or less. All right, Teddy Bruschi, Chiefs, we're going to win more or less than 11.5 games.
Yeah, Greeny, I'm done doubting these Kansas City Chiefs. I'm going to say more than that. The offense is going to be great, but over that playoff run, McDuffie, Karloftis, Watson, these are names of rookies that played prominent roles on defense, multiple rookies, and they're only going to get better. I'm going to say definitely more. That defense is going to get better also.
KC getting better. Field Yates, Steelers are at 8.5 wins, more or less.
Death, taxes, and Tomlin, Greeny. 16 seasons under Mike Tomlin as their head coach. The Steelers have been above 500 or at 500 in all 16 of those years. Make it 17 this season. I am not forecasting a tie. Give me 9 wins for the Steelers in what will be a competitive division.
I'm still rooting for the tie at some point for him to go exactly 500.
It's so climactic, though.
In 17 games. No, I agree with you. They'll be better than that. Canty. The Jets, 9.5 is the number, more or less.
I'm going more, Greeny, and I know it warms your heart, but the Jets couldn't overcome incompetent quarterback play last year. For context, they had the fourth worst QBR. The three teams behind them, two of them are drafting in the top 2 picks, and the other one, Russell Wilson, coming off a career lows when it comes to all passing categories. And oh yeah, by the way, second fewest passing touchdowns of anybody. Aaron Rodgers is going to change all of that.
Yeah, assuming that we wind up with Aaron Rodgers, that won't be the problem. They also have made some other acquisitions, including Alan Lazard, who is a new Jet. He told TMZ he's not worried that this deal has not happened yet. Here's Lazard on his longtime quarterback, Aaron Rodgers.
There's no worry on my end, especially knowing that Aaron has his full-on commitment to be a New York Jet this year. You know, I think a lot of us are obviously eager just for it to kind of get through. The beauty is that, you know, we don't play a game until September.
Right.
And, you know, we haven't even started OTAs yet. So there's no rush in getting this process done and everything. And I know once it goes through and we're able to get in the classroom together, we're able to get on the field together, we're going to start cooking up something special.
Okay, look, I mean, what?
They couldn't get it done during your week away, Greeny.
I mean,
they have not thought of you for once.
Have I not given enough? I mean, what more do you need from me here, guys? What have I missed? Catch me up, because I've been scouring and I've seen nothing.
Absolutely nothing is what you have missed, Greeny. So I think that there are ways in which it makes sense in which Aaron Rodgers has not been traded, and there are ways in which it does not make sense, which is the easy part of this. It doesn't make sense because Aaron Rodgers wants to be a Jet. The Packers are ready to move on. Why can't we get a deal done? But here are the reasons why it does make sense. As far as deadlines are concerned, we're now 1 month exactly away from the first of a few different notable deadlines in a potential Aaron Rodgers, not in a potential, in an eventual Aaron Rodgers trade to the New York Jets. That's the 2023 NFL Draft. And of course, if the Packers want to improve their roster for this year, the best way to do so at an affordable cost is through the draft. The Jets seem very firm in their belief. Pick 13, not going to be exchanged. The Packers, meanwhile, are saying a four-time MVP does not get traded for, like, you know, a third or fourth round pick. We want pick 13. Up to this point, both sides have dug their heels in. We have 31 days to resolve that before the draft. If not, we'll get to the eventual next deadlines after that.
So the Jets trade Elijah Moore for another number 2 last week, and I immediately think, well, there you go. This obviously, right. I mean, I'm not a genius here, but obviously you get that pick because that's what Green Bay says they want. You make the trade, it gets things done, and then I wake up here and I'm back on Monday, and we still haven't gotten this deal done. Can't he? What?
Yeah, but I'm agreeing with Phil in terms of not having time pressure on either side right now to get this done. We still got 5 weeks before the NFL draft kicks off, so I do think that there's the potential for them to consummate something. I do look at the Elijah Moore trade ahead of the owners' meetings this week as a prelude to them sitting down and having conversations, yeah, and then looking at the compensation that the Jets would be able to put together. Maybe they do keep the number 13 pick out of it, but if you add up the 42nd and 43rd overall pick, 2 second rounders, that's the equivalent of the number 17 overall pick in the draft value trade chart. So the Jets are moving closer to where the Green Bay Packers are in terms of what they want for compensation. It's just a matter of them being able to hammer out a deal.
The one thing I was able to do last week was I was able to working on my players for the draft, which, you know, we will do as always next month. And right in that period, and I know you know this well, Field,
yeah.
Right at that point in the draft is where all the offensive linemen are bunched up. They're all going to go there. The Jets want one of those guys to put in front of Aaron Rodgers, so it makes sense that they're trying to hold on to 13. So, Teddy, when does it become a problem? At what point? Everyone's telling me not to be upset about this. At what point will you say, all right, Greeny, go ahead, be upset?
This is going to get done. I mean, you're only going to get upset if this eventually doesn't happen. But Aaron doesn't want to play for Green Bay. Green Bay doesn't want Aaron, so it's going to happen. And the New York Jets, they should fight to keep 13. Now, what's more important here? Just think about it this way. The 13th overall pick and an offensive lineman that can improve your team or offseason work. I mean, Aaron's going to be fine. I mean, I'm a believer in offseason work also, but these quarterbacks and receivers, they can get together wherever they want and get acquainted, have a couple beers, and there's your chemistry right there. I wouldn't be worried. It's March 27th, okay? And that 13th overall pick is valuable. The Green Bay Packers may think that they have a leverage and they'll wait, but they don't want Aaron Rodgers to walk back in there. They've got a cap hit if he's there at the regular season of 50-plus. Field can talk more to that, but this is going to happen, and I think the Jets need to fight as hard as they possibly can to keep 13 because it's going to make them valuable for multiple years.
Before the draft, it's going
to
happen?
I don't know about that. I'll be trying to be succinct here, but if the Packers hold on to Aaron Rodgers until June 2nd,
yeah.
He will not count $40 million in dead money against their cap. It'll be split $16 million this year, $24 million next year, which if you're Green Bay, while you wouldn't get draft capital until 2024, you'd have $24 million extra to work with to augment your roster through late free agent ads or potential trades.
And we're going to lose me.
Your hair might be gone.
I don't make it.
You'll be here, but your hair may be gone.
I don't make it to June 2nd. I'll make it till right before the draft. Canty, we don't make it to June 2nd. I'm just telling you right now. June 2nd is not, guys, not okay. We cannot.
It'll be done before the draft.
That's so long as it's before the draft, all will be well.
R-E-L-A-X?
No, that's not.
There you go, Bill.
If that was the case, I would have been here all last week. Okay, in the meantime, all the Bruins continue to win. Their chase for history continues. They're visiting the Hurricanes yesterday. By the way, it was Hartford Whaler Day, which is why you're going to see a bunch of Whalers jerseys out there.
Not be allowed.
You're also going to see David Pastrnak. Oh, the breakaway. 5-hole for his 50th goal of the year. Kind of seems to squirt off the stick, but it's good. First time he's ever scored 50 in a year. He's to 600 goals in 583 games. Tied at one, but not for long. That's Pastrnak scores again, his second of the day. Bruins take a 2-1 lead. Third period, Hurricanes down 3-2. And watch Sebastian Aho. Right place, right time, and the right result. Smacks it home with a great pass through traffic. Game tied at three. We go to a shootout. Second round of the shootout. Bruins already up 1-0. Jake DeBrusk. That's the game. Bruins' 57th win of the year ties a franchise record for wins in a season, a record that's lasted more than 50 years. They've won 7 straight, so they are once again on pace to break the single-season wins and points records. They have 9 games left, including 2 more at home, to close out March. Their next game will be tomorrow against Nashville on ESPN+. Coming up, is Tom Brady truly done with football, or could he make another comeback? You're not going to believe what his former teammate thinks is possible. Plus, back to this. Was this really a foul? Did the officials get this right or completely wrong? We get to the bottom of it next. Thanks for getting up with us on ESPN.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We are back on Get Up, and as we approach the bottom of the hour, back to where we began, the controversial finish, Creighton-San Diego State, the call on Ryan Nemhard fouling Darian Trammell with 1.2 seconds remaining on that drive to the basket in a tie game. This was the extent of the contact on the play that sends San Diego State, the Aztecs, to the Final Four. And Seth Greenberg back with us. Jay Will makes his way in. Jay, we had a good debate over this at the very beginning of the show today. I'm not going to influence the jury in any way. Was that a good call or a bad call at the end of the game?
It was a bad call. I think it was a foul. But the first thing we're taught when we play the game of basketball is the first 5-10 minutes of the game, understand how the game is going to be officiated, right? Coach K and I would talk about this all the time. Hey, coach, they're not allowing hand checks. Hey, coach, they are allowing hand checks. Hey, there's a lot of physicality underneath the basket. I can get away with certain things. So once that has been established, screening, the rest of the game, I think I can play a certain way. Now, there are a lot of hands in different places, on the hips, on the, you know, pulling of shirts. So the whole game, you know, Seth came on our show, talked about 17 fouls being called in that game. By the way, Miami game, Texas, 42 free throws attempted.
Right.
This one's 17.
Right.
So they've dictated the way the game is being played. I just don't like to call it in to determine the game.
Yeah, well, we see it exactly the same way. Let me give the exact numbers again for those of you just joining us. There were 22 fouls called in that game, including that one. The other three games this weekend had 30, 37, and 39 fouls called. So if they're not calling it, Seth, again, a big portion of the audience just jumping in here. When you're coaching a game, when you're having those conversations, you expect the calls to be made consistently at the end from what they were at the beginning?
100%, Grady. Look, consistency is the most important thing for an official and for the players and for the coaches in terms of how you're coaching and how the players are playing. You cannot redefine a foul in the last 2 minutes of a basketball game. You basically set the rules of the game by how the game is called in the first half. Now, all of a sudden, you can't redefine in the last minute of the game. If that was a foul at the beginning of the game, then it needs to be a foul at the end of the game. If it wasn't a foul in the first 10 minutes, it wasn't a foul in the first 5 minutes of the second half, if it wasn't a foul with 5 minutes left in the game, it can't be a foul at the end of the game. You said 22 fouls, the fewest fouls of any game in the NCAA tournament. Only 17 free throws were shot. Anyone who watched that game would say that was a physical basketball game. All right, a physical basketball game, if it was physical, there'll be more than 17 free throws shot.
There right, go. And they let him play.
There you go, let
him
play.
And I loved it. I mean,
that's
my point
what you want to see.
Exactly. It was a terrific game in every single way, and I don't like the call. I don't like the way that it winds up deciding the outcome. And then very quickly, I have always been a proponent of instant replay in sports. The way they handled the end of that game yesterday is not what they should have had in mind with all of this. Going back, it should not be taken into account for this kind of minutia the way they did. Yes.
Shot, yeah.
I mean, two-tenths of a second have gone off the clock every single time that a ball has been thrown into someone since the beginning of time. So it was a lot to be frustrated about at the end of what was otherwise a magnificent game. Meantime, the other game was great yesterday, too. Jay Will, let's take a quick look at this. Miami and Texas yesterday. This is for the final spot in the Final Four. 2 minutes left. It's a two-point game like it seems every game in this tournament was. Marcus Carr with a nice turnaround.
I mean, I tell you, Texas played their tails off. Wong only had 2 shot attempts in the first half. Really got going in the second half as well.
Yeah, Texas had that big lead in the second half, but then Miami came all the way back. That's Norchad Omier. Eventually, this foul is called for the undercut by Brock Cunningham. Omier thought it was on him. Instead, he would make both foul shots. Miami gets the lead, and then here's the turnover at the end. Texas just couldn't find any offense.
Yeah, but I got to tell you, I love the active hands by Miami. I mean, digging in from the weak side, that's what you're taught, and Miami is the lone representative from, Seth, the weakest conference supposedly in the ACC that finds a way to get a team to the Final Four.
Miami, their first Final Four ever, capping off a Final Four that almost no one, quite literally, on Earth had. There were over 20 million brackets filled out on ESPN. Only 37 of them had this Final Four. That's one out of every 542,000. As a polar opposite, 271,000 brackets had all four of these teams losing in the first round. So it was infinitely likelier that we would see none of these teams make it out of the first weekend than make it into the last weekend.
Just want to say congratulations to Miami, but Texas, do the right thing. Rodney Terry deserves to be the next head coach. How he has gotten these kids to buy in, Seth, after losing Chris Beard, has been truly phenomenal to watch. He loves them, they love him, and he's a hell of a coach. He deserves to be head coach.
Dickie V made that point on the last day that I was here also, was campaigning for him. But let me ask you a question, Seth, because since I've been kind of, you know, laid up for the last week or so, I have watched every game of this tournament. I don't think it's an exaggeration to say I've seen everything, and it has been magnificent. I mean, it has been as good as the tournament has ever been. And yesterday when I tweet that, I'm getting back a million responses of people saying to me, yeah, but no one's going to watch the Final Four. It's all these, no one had this, no one cares about any of these teams. You know, Seth, you made your life in this sport. Is it a good thing or a bad thing that we have a Final Four that is this unconventional?
It's fine for 1 year. I don't think it's going to be something that will happen each and every year. I mean, think about last year. We had Duke, North Carolina, Villanova, and Kansas. We had the bluest of bloods. Now, we have one blue blood left in this tournament, and that's UConn. Four national championships since 1999. They are a blue blood. Here's the interesting thing, Greeny. There are no McDonald's All-Americans. I'll give you another interesting thing. There are zero true freshmen. We spend all our time talking about the freshmen. It's the one and done. And you know what? This Final Four is about teams. It's about transfer portal, filling roster spots, and developing teams. So, look, it's unique. I think for 1 year, you'll see the blue bloods back. But Connecticut's a blue blood. Let's not fool ourselves.
You know what the problem is? I don't think college basketball anymore is for the casuals, right? It's for the insider, people that pay attention to it. Like, now you might see some changes next year with Kentucky's team, DJ Wagner and company. There'll be a lot of marketing around individuals like that. But until we start having brand names of players for the casuals that get marketed everywhere and get, like, the way we talked about Zion Williamson, the way we talked about Trae Young, I don't think casuals will pay attention to it as much. But for basketball inside people, I love seeing a team like FAU win more tournament games this year than they have in the history of their program because it's meaningful. And that's what we're going to see more of with the transfer portal and NIL.
No, I think that's right. And look, at the end of the day, the games have been unbelievably good. The question is, do people stop caring when they no longer have their sheet, right? When you don't, it's fun to watch FAU beating the team that you had going to the Final Four. Once you don't have anything left in all of it, do you lose some of those casual fans? Real quick final word, Seth, go.
Yeah, just think you talk about Zion Williamson, you talk about Trae Young. Those guys didn't get to the Final Four either. But you do need some teams that people can relate to, although these stories are absolutely magnificent.
All right, Seth, we'll come back to you a little bit later. But I want to get a take from Jay on someone who never played in the NCAA tournament because he didn't play in college. And he came
he
off the bench. Yes, he most certainly did not. LeBron, I think he's done okay for himself in the NBA. But yesterday, not a good day. LeBron coming off the bench for the second time in his career. We showed you the full highlight earlier. He scored 19, but the Lakers got handled in an important game at home by the Chicago Bulls. Anthony Davis took just 8 shots in this game, kind of banged up the fingers a little bit. What? I mean, the Lakers, what?
So, look, I mean, defensively, they didn't stop anybody. They allowed Chicago to shoot 50% from the field. And here's what I will say about LeBron. There's always going to be an adjustment period when you bring back the best player in basketball, right, for a team offensively, so guys don't defer. But Anthony Davis, this is where Darvin Ham needs to come into play here. I can't have 5 other Laker players on the roster that have taken more shots than you. And I know the finger issue, I know a little bit of foul trouble, but right from the gate, I think the Lakers need to make a priority to play through Anthony Davis. And people are going to say, well, oh, I'm tired of AD being a little bit lethargic or just casually roaming. Darvin Ham has to coach him to play through AD. Get your tail on the block. Take 20 shots a game. Until they start doing that, this team is not going to reach their ceiling.
So, look, the season ends 2 weeks from
yesterday.
7 games left for them. And it could go either way. They're like 2 games away from being out of the play-in completely, and they're 2 games away from being better than the play-in, if you will. Which is likelier to you? Is it likelier to that they just get left in the dust or that they actually pick up some steam here and finish up strong?
I think they'll pick up steam. I mean, Rui Hachimura didn't play last night. D'Angelo Russell didn't play last night. This team still, when they're fully healthy on the floor, should be enough to get them in the playoffs. Will it be enough to get them to the Western Conference Finals? No, I don't think so.
Okay, we'll see. The West has been really
weird. It's open.
This year. Meanwhile, let me shoot the J with you here. Get a couple of quick takes on a few other things. Let's talk about Jaylen Brown. He scored 41 in a dominant Celtics win. Are they going back to the finals?
Back to the finals. Yeah, I would think that the NBA finals, you're talking Eastern Conference finals, Brady.
Let's go NBA finals.
NBA finals, I'm going to take the Milwaukee Bucks.
Me too.
I still do think Jaylen Brown belongs in an all-NBA team. The question is, I think for this, if they don't get to the NBA finals this year, will we be seeing Jaylen Brown in a Boston Celtic uniform moving forward?
Warriors lose at home yesterday to the Timberwolves. Are they going to get this together?
I can't answer any question about the Warriors until I know what's going on with Andrew Wiggins. And I know it's off-the-court issues. Nobody knows what's going on. We're not hearing about it. He is a key cog to their team, helping them win a world championship last year. If he's not back on the court, this team doesn't have the defense, nor do I think they have the ability on the road to close out games. So, no.
And then the Mavs lose two consecutive games to the Hornets, who have literally nothing to play for. Why hasn't this worked out better with these two
guys?
I'm going
to tell you what's happening right now, Greeny.
Yeah.
What's happening on social media, it is lame that people are saying, oh, it's Kyrie Irving's fault. He's played 15 games with this team. By the way, let's talk about a couple of things from a management perspective.
Sure.
Jalen Brunson, who has the Knicks in fifth right now in the Eastern Conference, was able to walk free away from Dallas, okay? Free. They got nothing in return. You're seeing what the return is for New York on that investment, okay? Also, you lose Dorian Finney-Smith. You lose Spencer Dinwiddie. You lose your defensive ability on the perimeter. Now you drop, you parachute Kyrie into that situation. 15 games, that's hard to ask anybody to hit the ground running.
Fair enough. But I mean, to you, that's the explanation here, because it's been worse than you might have imagined it would be. Even when they both play, they don't win.
I agree. That's going to be a challenge. I mean, I think they're make the play-in, but I don't think they're going to – I said from the beginning, just because they're explosive offensively, I don't see them making a deep run. I said it.
He's Jay, the Jay of KJM, ESPN Radio, coast to coast. Always outstanding, my man. Thank you. In the meantime, as we roll along, coming up next, how much blame belongs to Belichick for the Patriots' reach and struggles? How much pressure is there to turn it around? We'll answer those questions next. You're watching Get Up on ESPN. We are back, and it is the game that is sweeping the nation.
Let's go!
Can he or can't he? All right, Chris, can Lamar Jackson still get a guaranteed contract? Can he or can't he?
He can, G, and if you paid attention to what Ozzie Newsome said last week, they don't even know whether or not the norm is going to be guaranteed contracts for quarterbacks. Justin Herbert, Joe Burrow, Jalen Hurts, all eligible for contract extensions. Hard to imagine that they don't ask for guaranteed deals. I think that high tide raises all boats. Lamar Jackson eventually ends up getting a guaranteed deal.
All right, next is Ezekiel Elliott. Can he rush for 1,000 yards again? Can he or can't he?
He can't with a capital T. Last season, Elliott was 32nd out of 43 backs when it came to broken tackles per rush attempt. The last time the guy had a 20-plus yard touchdown run was December of 2019. That's 3 years ago, folks. It ain't going to happen. You got to make guys miss in order to be a lead back and get the volume of touches to get 1,000 yards rushing.
All right, and then one more. We're given the win totals. Can Bill Belichick lead the Patriots to over 7.5 wins next year?
I'm going to say he can. In 23 seasons in Foxborough, Bill Belichick has only had fewer than 8 wins twice. I got to imagine that even with some questions on the offensive side of the ball, that defense will still be pretty good. They still create a lot of takeaways. They still find ways to score. And by virtue of that and more stability with the offensive coaching staff, Bill Belichick finds his way to 8 wins or more.
But here's the deal. Caesars Sportsbook does not think they're going to be any good. They've missed the playoffs 2 of the last 3 years. They're 25-25 in that span. And right now, Caesars has them at 70-1 to win the championship. Those are the same odds as Atlanta and Carolina. For context, the Bears are 40-1. The Browns are 35-1. The Raiders, with their former coach and their former quarterback, are 40-1. So let me bring Teddy Bruschi in on this part of the conversation. He's already got the
so
smile
you're
on his.
Saying there's a chance.
He's got. If anybody knows about winning Super Bowls in New England, it's Teddy Bruschi. But Teddy, I mean, some people are looking at a team that has gone in the wrong direction, and they're pointing the finger at the legendary coach, Bill Belichick. Is that fair?
I think it is fair. This is Bill's team. He calls the shots, and you know, he made some decisions last year that were very controversial in terms of who was calling offensive plays, bringing Matt Patricia over, a great coach in his own right, but a great defensive coach. And I think that the biggest mistake, okay, that Bill made was this. He overestimated his players' ability to handle that type of change. That's what I think the problem was, because when they're looking around and they don't know who the offensive coordinator is, they see Judge, they see Patricia, they see confusion. They didn't have anybody in there to say, hey, fellas, stop. This is the way it's going to be. Let's all get on the same page from a player perspective. That's what they didn't have, and Bill overestimated his players to do that. I can understand the frustration by Mac Jones, and we all got on him about his antics and the way he, his body language and the way that he was constantly complaining. But when you don't know, I can only imagine when I'm a linebacker and I'm looking for a call and I'm not sure who to go to and there's miscommunication and there's confusion, it's going to happen. I don't think they were strong enough from a leadership perspective on the offensive side of the ball to deal with this type of coaching change.
And so where does that all take us to, Field? I mean, Belichick is a legend, and he deserves all of the accolades that he's received. You can make a pretty good argument he's the greatest coach in NFL history, but it's been a rough little go here. Where does it go from here?
Well, they have solved one of the issues that Teddy just highlighted from last year, which is they have an offensive coordinator and an excellent one at Bill O'Brien. Just by adding him and allowing him to run this offense, this team should be better than it was last year, factoring in zero of the personnel moves that they have made up to this point. But that's where things get complicated, is if you look at this division alone, and let's imagine this world in which Aaron Rodgers is your New York Jets starting quarterback, Greeny, it's clear, blue chip talent, Patriots are fourth out of four. And the question is, can excellent coaching, perhaps the best coaching in the division, overcome the gap in blue chip talent? And that is why those odds are at 70-1, because the odds makers believe within this excellent division, the Patriots have the least upside of the four.
Well, Belichick comes off of the Bill Parcells tree, and Bill used to have a sign in his office that said, coaches with good schemes and no talent coach at unimportant places. Mm. And that's where the Patriots are at right now. They're an unimportant team when it comes to the AFC East. I'm like Field. I see this as the worst team in the division on paper. Now, we'll see how the season plays out, but I know a lot of people in the post-Brady years are looking at what's happened in Foxborough as a referendum on Bill Belichick's career, and I'm not going to take it that far, but what I will say is this upcoming season is a referendum on Mac Jones, the quarterback, because if you look at last year, you're talking about him finishing 28th in QBR. The other four quarterbacks that were behind him, Davis Mills, Carson Wentz, Baker Mayfield. Ain't none of them going to be starter quarterbacks going into 2023. So all I'm simply saying is this is about Mac Jones. Now, Bill Belichick has some blame in this because he's the one that selected Mac Jones, but I think there's far more pressure on him going into this upcoming season than Belichick.
But to the point, I think what Teddy brought up, I think a lot of the coaching was a part of, at least part of the reason that Mac Jones had the struggles he had. It's a lot to ask a young player to overcome. Maybe Brady could overcome that 20 years in. It's another thing to ask a guy in his second year to overcome whatever it was that they were asking him to overcome last year. Yes. Not fair?
No, that's fair. But again, the personnel does come down to Bill Belichick because he is the football czar. He's the one that picks the groceries. He's the one that picks the coaching staff.
Oh, I get that.
So it's all on him.
I agree with that. I'm just talking about the referendum on
that's
Mac Jones' piece
of it. That's absolutely fair, Greeny. That's absolutely fair because, like I was saying earlier, if you had a locker room think of championship teams, like those guys could, like, you could handle young coaches. I mean, our group as linebackers, I mean, we're talking a long time ago, but still, you bring a young coach, a first-year coach that's from the other side of the ball. I mean, it's like, okay, we can handle this, and you can help sculpt the coach from a player perspective. This is what they didn't have. These players were looking to be told what to do. And that's what kind of offense they had with a young quarterback. Tell me, coach, help me coach how to win. Help me learn how to win, rather than the players that had, I know how to win, I know how to do this. Wait a second. What you just said is a mistake. Okay, correct that, because I know what you just said is wrong. That's the relationship that they didn't have. That's where Bill overestimated his players.
That's really well said. I'll just say it because you're too modest to say it. If they had Tom Brady and Teddy Bruschi, things would have worked out a whole lot better based on some of those changes that they just made. I want to show you one other thing from that division.
There
because
you go.
I've been saying this forever, okay? I've been saying this since the kid came in the league. Bills coach Sean McDermott finally sees it the way I see it. Mm. He had this to say to NFL.com about his great quarterback, Josh Allen, who was great. But he said, quote, I don't think that's a healthy way to play QB in this league, and it's undefeated that things are going to happen when you play that style brand of football. He's one of the best in the league, and I don't want to take his personality away from him, but there needs to be an adjustment in that style of play. And again, by style of play, we're talking about the fact that this guy gets hit like he's a running back, and everyone keeps telling me. Everyone keeps telling me, oh, Greeny, he's so big and strong, it doesn't matter. You know who they said that about? Back in my days on Mike and Mike when I was making the same point, they said that about Cam Newton. Mm. And here's Cam Newton at the age of whatever he is, 32 or 33, throwing footballs at Auburn, trying to get a job.
Who was the defensive coordinator in Carolina when Cam Newton was there?
It was Greg McDermott.
Sean McDermott.
Greg McDermott knows. Doug McDermott knows that Josh Allen is getting hit too much.
And I understand it. There's this very fine line between allowing a player with the supernova skill set that Josh Allen has and allowing him to be this effective runner. He might be the best goal line runner in the NFL. He's not even a running back. That being said, Sean McDermott understands the responsibility that he has and the obligation that he has to himself, to the organization, and, of course, to Josh Allen to think about the bigger picture here, right? As we talked about, there was the Cam Newton example. I think the Chiefs are a good example for the Bills to look at right now. A few years ago, Patrick Mahomes got hurt. And this player right here, a quarterback against the Broncos on a Thursday night football game, dislocated his kneecap. You know what hasn't happened since then? Quarterback sneaks in Kansas City. Right. Andy Reid said, I get it. It's the most efficient play in the NFL. Just ask Jalen Hurts and Nick Sirianni in Philadelphia. But you know what's more important than 1 yard? Is the quarterback who makes $45 million per year. That's what Josh Allen means to the Buffalo Bills. It's time for them to rein things in a little bit.
Teddy, I've been saying it forever. He gets hit too much. What do you think?
I agree, and if I'm Sean McDermott, I'm just going to come up to him and say, hey, Josh, listen, we signed this Damian Harris kid, we got the Cook kid, we got Nyheim Hines, let's let them work, okay? Well, I'll make you a deal, Josh, okay? Let's let them work in September, October, and November, okay? After Thanksgiving, I'm giving you the ball, okay? Come playoff time, I'll give you the ball, man, you can do what you want to do, but the first 3 months, work with me here. And this is what we got to do. And I think just make a deal with him from a head coaching perspective, and I think he'll be all right. Because you can't change this guy. He's absolutely crazy.
100%. Quick final thought, Canty. Go.
Yeah, last 3 years, the Buffalo Bills are 31st in rushing yards from their skill position players outside of the quarterback. Mm. That's not sustainable. The team that was behind them, the Houston Texans. You want to keep Josh Allen healthy, you got to find a way to find physicality in the run game outside of your quarterback in order to keep him upright.
That's right. It's not about not letting him be him. It's about putting a person who is your entire franchise in harm's way as often as you do. All right, we have so much to come here this morning. Boy, I've got a lot to say. I got a lot to catch up on, including this. How about that finish yesterday? Controversial consequences. Final four is set. Fabulous finish ruined by the officiating. We're talking about it next.